It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday, August 14th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. This week, the Federal Communications Commission and lawmakers are trading public statements about municipal broadband. What the heck is that? That's when towns and cities, not companies, build broadband internet networks. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler has announced he will move to preempt laws in some 20 states that say municipalities cannot build these networks. Why does Chairman Wheeler think he can do that? Harvard visiting professor Susan Crawford says it's about a law passed almost two decades ago.
When we passed the 1996 Telecom Act, Trent Lott, Republican from Mississippi, was way behind a provision that said to states, you can't make it difficult or impossible for entities to compete in the telecommunications market.
Municipal networks like the Gigabit Network in Chattanooga, Tennessee, technically count as competition. Crawford says city mayors want the power to build networks, but that it's also becoming important for smaller communities.
Earlier this week, I was in Rockport, Maine, where they introduced their gigabit dark fiber network. This is a really small town, 3,000 people, and they are so excited because they want to work where they live. They love Maine, and they want to stay there.
Whether or not the FCC can push for this remains in question. House Republicans say the FCC should keep out of states' economic affairs and passed a bill this week that would strip the FCC's power to preempt state laws. But the president and the Senate still need to sign off. We've talked a lot about cookies on our show, those bits of code that track your online habits so advertisers can deliver you ads and know your behavior. But in the mobile world, our behaviors are different. So Google is using a new kind of tool to more accurately track mobile users. Slate's Will Arimus has been looking at this. Will, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks, Ben.
All right. This is a new kind of cookie.
Google is introducing a way to track you on your mobile apps. It's already really, really good at tracking you on the web.
Sure.
The problem is more and more people are spending their computer time on their phone, and apps are not subject to the cookies that Google uses to track you on the web. That's a big problem for Google. It makes it really hard for them to know absolutely everything about you, which, of course, is what they need to do in order to target their advertisements.
Right, and make their money. But wait, so what kind of apps are we talking about here?
We're talking about a broad range of mobile apps.
Okay.
And the thing is that mobile apps actually already do track you in some ways. What Google is doing is trying to link up the cookies that are on the web with the anonymous identifiers that track you across mobile apps. So that if you go to a shopping site on the web and then you open that same site later on your phone, it'll know that you've been there twice, as opposed to right now it thinks those are two different people.
Well, it's also interesting, the idea that we spend so much time in apps that are, I guess, sort of like closed gardens, right? And so if Google finds a way to deliver us ads within those apps that is connected to also our web presence when we're sitting at a computer, then it'll serve its shareholders better and supposedly serve us better with better targeted ads.
That's right. What they want to do is serve you advertisements that actually work, that you actually find useful, and they need to know more and more about you in order to do that. They insist that if they can just get good enough at tracking, then we won't hate the ads so much.
Will Arimus, senior writer about technology for Slate.com. Will, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.
From the little bitty screen to the big screen, the shift to digital projection in movie theaters has been underway for a while. It's still costly, though, and two fixtures of the theater scene are feeling the pinch. I'm talking about the Dollar Theater and the Art House. Grant Blankenship reports.
Film snakes around the projection booth at the Parkway Discount Cinema in Warner Robins, Georgia. Theater manager Alicia Bowers has a love-hate relationship with film these days.
Run too fast and it'll throw the film on the ground, or if they're moving it from one platter to another platter, like they drop it, it's a big pile of mess.
A digital blockbuster, by contrast, is delivered on a 6-inch by 4-inch hard drive. The Parkway's run is coming to an end this summer. It's closing rather than convert to digital. Why?
It's questionable whether you could recover your investment. It's something around $50,000, $75,000 a screen to convert to digital.
That's Bill Stembler, CEO of the Georgia Theater Company. He says when you do the math for a 16-screen multiplex, you get the picture. Luckily, the movie studios have a solution. They offer theaters a subsidy called virtual print fees. Every time you buy a ticket at the multiplex at what the studios call full price, the studios pay to help retire a piece of the theater's digital debt.
The film companies are basically paying for about 80-85% of our cost to be digital.
Unless you're a discount screen.
They don't care about the discount theaters.
So how do virtual print fees work at your local art house? Sarah Beresford is a board member at Cine, an independent theater in Athens, Georgia.
But I think for a lot of the art house cinema operators, there were too many strings attached to that agreement.
Remember, virtual print fees come with studio demands about which movies will be shown. Art house operators like their independence. At the Parkway Discount Cinema, Alicia Bowers resets for the next show.
You know, it's rewarding to be able to get it up on the screen and seeing it play, and it's definitely a nostalgic feeling.
But film lovers only have a little time left to indulge that nostalgia. In Macon, Georgia, I'm Grant Blankenship for Marketplace.
Speaking of that shift from analog to digital, I just wrote a piece about Max Headroom. Remember that icon of artificial intelligence from the 1980s? Vintage AI, baby. That's for my weekly Codebreaker blog. Check it out every Thursday at marketplace.org. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.